Good evening, James McKinney here with my Science Hour for August 22nd, 2019. Racing on in this year of madness. Well, I don't know if it's madness. Things are pretty good in a lot of respects. But my main science topic tonight, are we headed into an ice age, as some people are saying? Anyway, this is, I don't make predictions myself, because as soon as you make a prediction, something else changes. There are many, many, many factors that control what's going on planet Earth, not the least of which is the sun, and not the least of which we have some data, but it's hardly data that you can use to make predictions with. But anyway, I'll be talking about that. Here's something just in. India has a spacecraft that is landing on the moon. They have an orbiter, etc., which can take pictures of the moon, but nothing that's really high resolution. The main goal of the orbiter, from what it sounds like, is to transmit data from a lander that is landing near the south pole of the moon, and the lifetime of this lander, get this, is about one day. It's not going to last because of the frigid temperatures there, which brings up some very interesting questions about other people who've landed on the moon, etc., or claim they've landed on the moon. But the point I want to make here relative to what might interest the majority of us is that they are not, I repeat, they are not going to take pictures of the alleged Apollo lunar landing sites. Even though when NASA shows this, they have a big picture of the moon from a distance, and they say, okay, they put a little note there, that's where Apollo is, or allegedly is, or whatever. But interestingly enough, once again, here's a probe that goes to the moon. One would think that an international country like India, that is now going to be the fourth entity to land on the moon successfully, because private groups have tried this recently. Remember the Israeli probe that didn't quite make it? That was about a month or month and a half ago, maybe. Remember that the main thruster and the telecommunications went out on that just as it was starting its descent to land on the moon, and never made it. Crash landed. So we never got a real view of the moon, of the lunar surface. So the India probe, the little rover thing, I don't know how far it's going to rove in one day on the moon, but probably not very far. But there was some indications before that there was some ice near the south pole of the moon. So they're going to try and find and see if there's water ice. Now, why is water ice important? Well, if there is water ice on the moon, that would be interesting, because the moon has been where the sun can get at it, although minimally, for supposedly 4.5 billion years, why is there ice on the moon, on the surface of the moon? Because as the alleged Dirty Snowball Comet model states, that should all be baked off long, long, long ago. But there's still some there. Well, why is it there? It's like the same question. The four Galilean moons of Jupiter, three of them are covered with ice. In fact, a lot of ice, and they're not turning into comets. Well, why not? I don't know. Ask the Dirty Snowball Comet model experts. Don't ask me, because it doesn't make any sense at all. Those should be the biggest comets that one would ever see. And, of course, sitting there for allegedly 4.5 billion years, they've had plenty of time for all that ice to turn into comet tails, and they don't. So anyway, once again, the standard science community full of contradictions with very few answers and a lot of smoke screens. So anyway, India's space orbiting vehicle, you would think that they put a decent camera on there and maybe take an orbit, take a turn, a left turn somewhere, and try and get over one of those Apollo lunar landing sites to see if they could snap some decent photos. But no, once again, a probe goes to the moon, and no independent, here's the catch, that it's got to be an independent, verifiable image or set of images, etc., from an independent country or entity like India, but it's not going to happen once again. Okay, now this next story is amazing, amazing, amazing. Walmart this week announced that it's suing Tesla to remove solar panels on 240 of Walmart's stores. Now, given that there's 50 states, these would be Walmarts in about five per state on average. So these would be probably in major cities, these would probably be large installations. So Walmart is basically saying, take all your stuff and get it out of here. Remove everything that you've put on the roofs of Walmarts. Now, I can recall when the announcements were being made, not only for Walmart, but you've got companies like the high-tech companies saying, we're going to go green, we're going to have solar panels, we're going to have 100% green energy, etc., and all the big announcements were going out and all the big installations were starting. Well, now the reverse is beginning, and this is going to go on and on with the solar panels because they don't work. They do not work, and they're having other issues with them. One Walmart store actually had a fire. Now, the thing about solar is that there's relatively low voltage, and so then you have the big currents and you have the big wiring systems that connect this energy into whatever it's going to. So this is just the beginning. This is just the beginning. Remember that last April, China put a moratorium on solar, on installations of solar. In other words, China is no longer installing solar panels. But then they came back because it sent a shockwave through the entire world because China could not produce all of the solar panels that it wanted to install. So it was buying from Denmark, from Northern Europe, from United States. All of these solar panel companies were going big guns selling solar panels to China. And in one day, it all ended. It all ended last April because China realized that the more solar panels you installed, the worse it got because you couldn't ramp up nuclear or the mainly coal. China's mainly dependent on coal, a little bit of natural gas, which they get from the United States, imported. But primarily, it's coal that powers the Chinese economy. And they're opening up a new coal power plant every day to get increased energy for their unbelievable, huge economy with 2 billion people. But they realized that the more solar that they installed, the worse the situation got in that the central power companies could no longer control the voltage. So you get these surges and brownouts and uncontrolled voltages, high and low. And so they said, and so they understood that the more you installed, the worse it got. Well, I could have told them that before they installed all of that solar panel. And so now most of that is just sitting there idle in China. So, and what do you do with that? Well, of course, they're not going to go to the expense of tearing it out. So it's just going to sit there. And Walmart now is realizing, I'm sure, the same. They're going, wait a minute, this isn't the payback that we thought we're going to get. This isn't, and they're probably realizing that the solar panels, the output, is going down, down, down the tube as time goes on. So by, they got sold a bill of goods. Let's just say it how it is. And so the Walmart is suing Tesla to rip out all of the solar panels on 240 stores. So this is just the beginning. You're going to see this over and over again. But at the same time, get this, Florida Electric Light Company, Power and Light, is planning on installing 30 million solar panels by the year 2030. So that's in the next 10 years, they want to put in a total of 30 million solar panels. And so I was joking with a friend of mine yesterday about this, and I said it's kind of like the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge, that there's a crew of people, and this guy mentioned that there were 45 apparently painters who paint the Golden Gate Bridge. And they start at one end, and they paint and paint and paint, and they get to the other end. And by the time they get to the other end, they got to go back and start painting again. That's how long it takes them to paint the bridge, long enough for the paint to wear off that they started on the other end. So this is like a continual process of painting the Golden Gate Bridge, that nice, beautiful red color. So anyway, I think we're going to see a similar situation in Florida where the solar panels of effectivity, the effectiveness or the efficiency goes down by 50% after a 10-year period. So what you're going to see in Florida then is a continual implementation of solar panels. And when this crew of people get installing after 10 years, the solar panels, they'll get to go back to the beginning, start uninstalling, start taking out and putting in new panels. So this will be a never-ending business for the solar panel companies. Isn't that sweet? But who's going to pay for this? This is the question. Well, I wouldn't move to Florida anytime soon because your electric rates are going to go right through the ceiling because these things don't work. And here's the other issue with solar in Florida. Okay, Phoenix, you might be able to make a case for solar, because you don't have much clouds. It's in the middle of the desert. You have many, many days of pure sun. But Florida, if you've ever been there, which I have many times, I've lived in Florida. I've spent time there visiting and sometimes for extended stays, etc. But by 10 o'clock in the morning, it's cloudy. The clouds come out. And as soon as those clouds come out, the solar production goes zippo. And so it's not going to work. You know, solar panels in Florida would be like, let me see. This would be like selling bikinis and sandals to Eskimos. That's a good one. I like that. Selling bikinis and the flip-flops that you wear on the beach to Eskimos. Probably not going to sell a lot. It's not going to work real good. So anyway, Florida, yeah, 30 million solar panels. Well, that's one of the best boondoggles. I'd say that has to go as one of the biggest boondoggles of the year. And of course, government subsidized. And that's one thing. There's a big question mark in the whole alternative energy industry because the governments now are stopping subsidies. Recently in Oklahoma and western Texas, a big array of three-blade wind turbines got axed because they couldn't install it because there was the Oklahoma had canceled their subsidies, the state-approved subsidies for solar or for alternative energies. And by the way, the wing generator, which is progressing, and I'll be talking about that in a minute, does not need subsidies. It's the economic model is designed to not use subsidies. The three-blade wind turbines and the solar panels would not exist without subsidies. And there's no way. They've built their entire business model on subsidies. They've grown as companies with subsidies. And now that they're not going to get subsidies, they just cannot match. There's no economic model that allows them to exist. Okay, another thing in Florida and the Caribbean, the sargassum, that's an interesting name, very similar to sarcasm, seaweed algae is for the second year having a tremendous bloom. So this stuff comes washing in on the shore and they have to go with bulldozers and pickup trucks, and they figure that in Florida it's going to cost them $45 million to take this stuff and dump it. Apparently, you can eat it, but it's not real good tasting. It's not the good kind of seaweed. But you would think they'd be able to make it into something that animals could eat, or cows, or, you know, something. But at any rate, at this point, they're just hauling it away and dumping it somewhere, probably out in an empty field. You know, Florida has a lot of empty space, or some farmer who's not resident on his property is going to come back and find a big, big, big pile of sargassum seaweed on his property, rotting and with flies all over the place. So anyway, this is in the Caribbean also. But they are trying to get scientists to determine why this is the last couple of years. And you want to bet? You want to bet $1 million what the scientist's solution will be? I bet you $1 million they come back and claim it's global warming. Wow. I bet you $1 million. That's what the end result of scientific studies will be. And, of course, that's just a, you know, maybe they'll blame it on El Nino. Something that's completely hocus-pocus science. And, you know, but if you're going to Florida or any place in the Caribbean, apparently it's a big problem this year. I heard about it being an issue also in southeastern Mexico along the Mayan Riviera coast, where they have a similar problem. Okay, so switching gears just a little bit, I want to talk about water in your city, town, ranch, or wherever you live out in the farm. You need water filtration. I talk to people in little towns in, say, Iowa, and they think, oh, you know, we're out here, we have clean water. Well, unfortunately not. One of the biggest pollutants, if you're out in a rural area, is glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup. Or if you're in a city, especially in places like Florida around the Gulf Coast, they put in chloramines. Chloramine is, it's not really chlorine, it's a different chemical. The name sounds similar, but it's really a different chemical. But chloramine they put in the water supposedly to improve the taste. And so anyway, you got to get that stuff out of your water before you drink it or shower in it. So just want to remind you that my water filters, now that it's fall and kids are getting back to school, families are coming back from vacation, it's time to think about, oh, maybe it'd be a good idea, since we're all going to be showering every day at home and drinking water out of the tap and cooking and washing your sprouts or whatever you do with the water in your house, cooking potatoes, or, you know, boiling cauliflower or broccoli, whatever it is, you want to use filtered water, because right now the cancer rate in the United States is going through the roof. And the reason is because of all the chemicals. Our bodies are not made to absorb all of these chemicals. And I'll tell you something else. There's a lot of water filtration systems on the market, but they don't take out chloramines. There are companies that claim they do and that are using a chlorine test, not a chloramine test, a chlorine test to claim that they're removing chloramine. So that it's kind of a slip slide. And also, they don't test for the lifetime of the filter. Now, here's something that happened, and I'm not going to mention names or anything, but there are people who've done tests on a gallon of water, and they say, oh, their filters take out chloramine. Well, no, you have to do what I do to have a legitimate test, and that is to have the testing done for the lifetime of the filter. In other words, you designate the lifetime of the filter because of testing, not because you just pull this out of a rabbit's hat and claim some kind of number. And so when I, on my homepage, I have the numbers for the different types of filter elements, the standard and the imperials. And you can see how long these will filter out the designated chemicals, the volatile organic chemicals, VOCs, the heavy metals, the chloramine, the chlorine, arsenic and fluoride, which, by the way, none of the other filters take out. Mine are the only ones that take out arsenic and fluoride in the filter itself. You do not add, need an add-on filter. So if you're looking at other companies, ask them what kind of add-on filters they need for fluoride and fluoride and arsenic, and what you're going to find out is, if they're honest, is you have to have an add-on filter. I used to sell these when I used to, back in the old days when I sold Dalton's, and earlier days when I sold other kinds of filters, you had to sell this add-on filter, and it slowed the water flow way down, and it only lasted for 500 gallons. And so that was really a bad system. So now the arsenic and fluoride removal is done right in the JMCC GF filter elements, and it's designated for how many gallons. And also on my whole house filters, by the way, I just want to remind you that my whole house filters, I have the MR5 and 7. The MR5 filter would be plenty for most average households, and they're available on my webpage for just $1,666. That's 15% off for a whole house filter, so you're no longer showering in that chemical soup. And that's the issue. When you just step in that shower and the air vaporizes that water, you're breathing it in, all of those chemicals are going right into your body day after day. So you might feel clean, but when you come out, you just bathed in a chemical soup that's going to cause cancer. Your whole family is doing this. So for a very small price, you can add in a whole house water filter. And these are just my whole house water filters that I was selling before were about twice that price. We brought the price way down, very manageable, and very easy to install. If you're not real handy, you could call a plumber in. If you're real handy, you can install these yourself. Okay, so enough of that, but water filtration is very important, and it's something everybody should have in your house. If not, just get a gravity water filter for your kitchen, etc. Okay, enough of that. Okay, here's a very positive announcement about outer space. Virgin Galactic, and this is a very interesting announcement, a very new interesting twist on a company that's been around for a while, Bert Rutan's old company. Now, Bert, by the way, I don't know if you follow Bert Rutan, probably most of you don't, but he's the guy that had the long series of aircraft that, if you go to any of the air shows, people fly in from all over the place with Bert Rutan-designed aircraft, the Long Easy being probably one of the most common ones that people can build themselves. But Bert Rutan then went on to win the first XPRIZE. It was called the Ansari XPRIZE, given out by the XPRIZE Foundation, of which I happen to be, by the way, one of the awardees of an XPRIZE for the 2018 Technology Innovation Achievement Award, and for my wing generator, along with my water production from the air machines. But anyway, getting back to Virgin Galactic, so Bert Rutan designed the first spacecraft called Spaceship One, in which they went into outer space two times in a row within 7 days and won the initial $10 million XPRIZE. And no, I did not win $10 million. I got a healthy stipend, but it was the big prize was this original Ansari X Prize to go into outer space, and it was an amazing feat. Nobody ever thought that anybody would ever do this, and I knew it was possible, but then again, Bert Rutan was the engineer. It was his brainchild that made this happen. So a guy named Richard Branson came in and funded this. He saw Bert Rutan, what he was doing. He came in and threw the money in and said, okay, you do this, I'll throw the money in and stand by and watch. And so one of Branson's personal goals is to go into outer space himself. In fact, he has stated he will be one of the first tourists on his Virgin Galactic tourist aircraft. Okay, so anyway, they have purchased and built in Mexico. This is very interesting because it's near the United States, where possibly his biggest audience is to go into outer space, but it's in Mexico. It's in a foreign country. It's under the laws of Mexico. not the United States. And Richard Branson is not a U.S. citizen. So if you are a U.S. citizen, now there are laws about U.S. citizens doing anything in other countries. No other country has such laws. Okay, and I won't go into all that legal stuff at this point, but there are laws on you being an American citizen in if you are in other countries that do not apply to other people, say, of, say, England or India or any other country if they're out of that country. Okay, so anyway, this is interesting because now the United States has no control over this at all. Zero. So Virgin Galactic has its launch center in Mexico. And so anyway, that's where the tourists will go to go up into the space tourism. So they're not subject to the FAA, the Federal Aviation, whatever. They're not subject to U.S. law. They're not subject to anything. And Mexico is, I used to live there, is probably one of the loosest countries on the planet in terms of it's just because it's so disorganized. It's so disorganized and there's so much corruption at the top that, you know, that they don't have police forces. They can't manage what they've got, basically. So Mexico is a good place to have an operation where you can just pretty much do what you want. That's the point of my little discussion here. But anyway, that's very interesting because now we have somebody with a brain, Richard Branson, with business savvy operating, and he has good engineers building the product. And so I understand also that they have a newer spacecraft that they are going to test coming up very shortly. That might fly in as early as 2020. Anyway, that I feel is very positive. So we start to have, you know, like the stuff Elon Musk is doing, great stuff, big rock, but it's all subject to the United States and NASA and all the other baloney that you get in the United States, the FAA, the all of the regulation, etc. And anyway, so I find that very interesting. Just a quick aside note on cruise ships. Now, one time I was flying out of the Virgin Islands. I forget which island it was, but all of the Virgin Islands are frequented by cruise ships. It's one of the favorite destinations because you have lots of islands and you're cruising out in the Caribbean. It's beautiful, warm, but the problem is they're dumping gray water, which, by the way, might be associated with this algae bloom, I would think. You're pouring all of this soap and phosphates from the soap and all the cleaning agents that are used on that cruise vessel. You're just dumping it into the ocean. I would think that would cause like a lot of fertilization and cause the seaweed bloom. So that the shipping industry, the cruise ship industry, is potentially causing that seaweed issue. And also, you have between 3,000 and 7,000 people on a boat. Well, I have news for you. They all have to go to the bathroom every day. And although some of the newer ships have septic processing systems on the boat, ultimately, it goes back into the water. Some of them come into shore and have a facility on shore where they dump, but then ultimately that goes back into the ocean. So these cruise ships are just basically fertilization factories floating around on the ocean dumping, and just amazing amounts of water and sewage and gray water, etc., ultimately going back in the ocean. And my point about talking about flying out of the Virgin Islands, I was on a small plane coming up out of one of the Virgin Islands, and I looked down, and there was a cove. It was kind of like a bay. It wasn't where the cruise ships pick up and dump off the people. It was a cove out on the back side of the island, and these two ships were there, two full-size cruise ships, and there was just this big brown, flow coming out the back end of both of these ships. And I thought, oh my goodness, they're just dumping that right into the ocean right there. And the beautiful Caribbean island, you know, and you see the beautiful coastlines. But two big ships just unloading, and that flow went way out into the ocean. I mean, it was gross. I was just like, oh my goodness. So there's the cruise ships, of course, say, oh, they're really conscious of this and very careful. But I don't know how you can be careful with that much stuff coming out of the ship in the open ocean. So anyway, that's in the news today. You may have seen that, but I just wanted to relate my own personal experience of seeing those two cruise ships just unloading on the backside of that island. I think it was Tortola. No, it was, I forget which island it was. But at any rate, no, it's really obscene what those cruise ships are doing as far as dumping. And there's no way if... Yeah, let me just put it this way. On the open ocean, there are no real standards. So it's basically the standards that they set for themselves. But there's no way they can remove all of the chemicals and everything else that go into the water in those cruise ships. And that turns out to be a very good fertilizer. Okay, now another story that just came up was sent to me by a listener. Now, this is very interesting, and I'd never thought about this before. It was on a webpage that was referred to me. It's called What's Up With That, a very good page that questions and has very good editorial about things like global climate change, etc. But anyway, this article was about three-blade wind turbines, and it said, okay, how many insects? Now, we always think about the birds and the bats. That's in the news about the three-blade wind turbines, how they kill so many of these. But our belief, and my belief up to this point, was like, well, it's like in a place like California, out east of L.A., up in the mountains there, you see that massive, massive array of three-blade wind turbines. And by the way, as I was talking to someone from the U.S. Senate here a couple days ago, about this very issue, he said he drives that all the time, back and forth. And they always notice that those things are never spinning when you drive through that mountain pass where they're just, oh, you can't miss it. You know, all those wind turbines. But here's the issue. We think that, oh, well, that's a pass. The birds fly through there on their migratory path and they get hit by the wind turbines. But there's another analysis that's just come out that's very, very interesting. Okay, so the three-blade wind turbines are spinning around. By the way, the wing generator, this does not happen because you don't have the wings are, the wind passes right through them, if you understand how my wing generator works. So we've never had an issue with birds or bats or anything else being killed around the wing generators. Because but the birds see them and the bats can sense them, because with the three-blade wind turbine, it's just this skinny little blade and it comes spinning around and it doesn't necessarily have to hit them. It's the change in the atmospheric pressure from high to low to near vacuum that ruptures their lungs. And that's what kills them in a lot of places, not by physically hitting them for the mass carnage that's going around these three-blade wind turbines. But this new analysis came out, and he said what's going on is that the wind turbines are killing insects. And it's the smell of the insects that actually draw the birds who are looking for insects to feed on. They smell this, and so they come to where the three-blade wind turbine is. So it draws the birds and the bats to where the three-blade wind turbine is because of the smell. And so they see them now flying around trying to eat the insects that have been hit by the three-blade wind turbine. So you get this collection of birds and bats around the three-blade wind turbine. And so that's what's drawing all of these birds and bats. And then you have the birds of prey coming in that smell the birds and bats, etc., that have been killed. That creates another odor which draws in those birds to the directly to the spot where this three-blade wind turbine is set up. So it's a cycle in which first the insects are killed, then the birds looking for insects come in. They get killed because they're flying around where the turbine is. Well, it's a matter of time until they get whacked. And then the birds of prey all the way up to condors and eagles. And the federal government, get this, has given them a pass. The three-blade wind turbines have gotten a pass on any culpability for killing our national bird. They estimate that, I forget what the time frame, but 2,900 bald eagles have been killed by three-blade wind turbines. And once again, my wing generator does not have that issue. Because, first of all, it's not going to kill insects. It's not, the birds can see it. Let me just tell you a little story. One day I was walking out to one of the wing generators that was operating, and I looked up, and this little bird, you know, the size of a little bit bigger than a sparrow, came flying up to the wing and did this hover thing where he just flapped his wings, and he's looking at the wing going around and around and around, and he's flapping his wings, and he's looking at it. And then he proceeded to fly around the wing, which there was like, that was proof to me. And I've never seen around below the wing or anything like that. Never seen a dead bird, never seen a dead bat. And this was proof to me that the wing generator is visible. And for bats, they use reflectivity. They use their radar, their sonar basically, to locate to fly. You know, they say blind is a bat, but at night they're using radar, and that radar is also how they identify insects. So the wing, since it fills up that entire space, they're going to get a signal off of that, a reflective signal, and they're going to go, oh, there's something there. I got to fly around it. So the wing generator, because it fills up that entire space, is not going to kill birds and bats, and it's not going to kill insects because the wind goes straight through it. And as the thing turns, the wind just passes through. So the wing generator is not going to kill insects. It's not going to kill birds and bats. And then the birds of prey will not have a reason to come in to the region of the wing generator. But this was a very interesting analysis, something that I had not heard before. Now, we also know that solar arrays develop a lot of heat. Just a fun fact of solar panels is they convert about 20% of the solar light into electricity. Well, that creates heat because of the transfer of electricity. But the other thing is, what happens to that other 80% of the sunlight? Well, they're not reflective, so they're absorbing that, so they get very hot. And here's one of the fallacies also of solar panels, is the rating that they're given, the voltage rating. Say you buy a 295 watt, let's just say for round numbers, a 300 watt solar panel, or you buy some other size of solar panel. That rating is done, that's measured in a cold laboratory with a flash test. It's called a flash test because they give it a flash of light. They measure the amount of electricity that's generated, and they say, oh, that's how much electricity it generates. But when that panel is sitting out in the sun and hot as can be, absorbing all that sunlight, the production goes way down. They don't produce their nameplate value. And like I said before, they lose about 50% of their efficiency over a 10-year period. So they're horrific. They don't work, and they're certainly not worth the investment. By the time you get them installed, they're already losing efficiency and as much as 50% over a 10-year period, which means they're basically useless. You would have to double your solar array after a 10-year period just to keep the same amount of energy that you originally purchased. Okay. So anyway, back to the topic of excess heat developed by solar panels. Now, 80% of that solar energy is reflected back into space. And so it's like if a bird is flying over this, it's like all of that heat is being reflected back up and it's tremendously hot. So it kills birds that are flying over these solar arrays, and they don't know it. They're just flying. You know, they look at they don't really understand that there's a lot of heat there. So there's this invisible source of energy. Now, people are expecting to pave vast areas. Now, an area of for 30 million solar panels, I can't even imagine how many counties they're going to have to pave with solar panels to get 30 million solar panels into Florida. But with the heat in Florida, et cetera, you're going to have massive die-offs of flying things, like especially birds. There are birds in Florida, lots and lots of birds. Well, you're going to have this tremendous carnage once again. And here's the thing about the wing generator is that it covers very little area. A 50-megawatt wing generator will replace 125 three-blade wind turbines or 600,000 solar panels. So anyway, what's going on with the wing generator? Just a quick update. We're openly marketing now the 2, 3, 5, 10, 25, and 50-kilowatt models. And so what I realized is that when we started getting responses from people to my request for, you know, are they interested in an alternative energy, the wing generator, a lot of the people that wrote back don't need that much power. A 50-kilowatt wing generator, that's a lot of power. Just to give you an idea, let's go down to a 2-kilowatt wing generator, which is the smallest one. That would be not quite enough to power a residential house in the suburbs with all of its necessities. A 3-kilowatt would power a typical residence. What you do is you take the 3 kilowatts, you divide that by 2, and that's an estimate, and say on average that's how much energy this thing could provide day and night, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And so, and let me tell you, it's a lot more than solar panels, which only work a couple hours of the day. And also the cost factor is just, with the wing generator, there's no comparison. It costs a lot less, and also your battery packs are much smaller. You have a much smaller battery pack than you do with solar. So all of these cost savings go into this, and if you're interested, we'll run the numbers for your particular location. But so imagine that a 3-kilowatt system would be enough for an average, say, farm. Say if the farm is a working farm, then we might recommend like a 5 or a 10-kilowatt system. And so what I was starting out with was the 10 and the 50-kilowatt, which for some people was just too big. And so now we're working with the 2, 3, and 5-kilowatt systems. And this is something that it also simplifies the gearing, the transfer of energy from the wing to the power supply, the device that actually creates the power. So there's a lot of cost savings. And the other issue is that we don't have to send a crew out with some of these smaller systems. If somebody, you know, working on a ranch or a farm, they're used to working with equipment, used to assembling, and, you know, they're handy with understanding how to put things together. And so the idea is that we're starting, I made a realization that a lot of people out there need these smaller systems, and that also gives them a chance to take a look at them. Some people might buy multiple systems. You might have a remote location on a ranch that you want power for, but you don't need 10 or 50 kilowatts. You might need 5 or 3. And then by the main ranch house, you'll put in one that does, say you have a pumping station out in a remote area. Then maybe a 2 or 3 kilowatt would be enough for that. And then by the main ranch house, you would have maybe a 10 kilowatt, maybe a 25 kilowatt. And then you could convert to electric cars, electric pickup trucks, etc. Because we have a electric power head that can be powered by the wing generator to charge automobiles or motorcycles or pickup trucks, which are on the market today, by the way. So anyway, that's just a note. And my main goal, by the way, is to sell the big ones, the big commercial ones, the 10 to 100 megawatt, the really big ones that'll start really offsetting our energy bill. So I talk about this in my 2009 ebook, McCanny Wing Generator World Energy Project, where I predicted the failure of three-blade wind turbines and solar. And it's happening. It's exactly what I predicted because, you know, I'm a physicist. I made an analysis. I said, these things don't work. They never will work. They're not cost-effective. The only reason they're there is because of subsidies. And now, guess what? Walmart is waking up and finding that out. They're telling Tesla, come get your junk, get it out of here. And that's what they're realizing, that that's what they got. They thought they were green. They had some corporate decision. Everybody was pounding their chest about how great they were. Walmart, green, eco. How many other terms can you throw at that one? But now they're realizing that they don't work. So they're telling Tesla, come get your stuff, get it out of here. And that's going to start happening more and more. Okay, so on to the main science topic. The question I asked originally is, are we heading into an ice age? Now, this is the flip side of global climate change. Finally, teams, large groups of scientists are coming out and saying that global climate change is nothing but a hoax. It's never been anything but a hoax. And some of these people are making a prediction that we'll head into an ice age, and that historically there have been ice ages followed by these warming periods. And so that this is nothing more than cycles. It has to do with the sun. There was some research done around the turn of the 1900 century, the 1900s, showing that there are various cycles dealing with the sun. And I don't really believe these cycles at all, because why do I believe that? Because we really don't have that good of information. The Greenland ice cap and tree rings, they use those, and those are very reliable going back, you know, thousands of years. But then again, the farther back you get, the more unreliable the data gets. But there is indication, and it's very good scientific work, that there have been warming periods, and then that there have been cooling periods, but there was a major ice age within the last 10,000 years. And of course, once again, the data is, I would say it's not 100% reliable in that relative to the timing. It's very certain that a lot of these events occurred, the cooling and the warming periods, but I really don't believe the dating. I think there's some flaws in the dating, and it's very subtle. But the point is that there are people predicting now that we are heading into an ice age, and I don't go along with that at all. The last thing we need is ice age hysteria. And what this ultimately comes back to is, how should we be using energy? Should we be using and ramping up the use of energy? And there are some studies which I have looked at, and I believe that sometime in later in this century, if planet Earthlings continue to use energy at the rate we're using it, and this is at a horrific pace, that we're going to run out of the major sources of energy that we have. And that is coal, primarily coal, but natural gas. And I've talked about this before, that with fracking, what do? You accelerate the extraction of natural gas and other types of gases and liquids in the ground. But you accelerate that. But then the second time you come back and try and do fracking again, you get much less than you would get if you had not done fracking in the first place. So fracking is something that there have been some Johnny-come-latelys making big money. This is a story in itself. And out west, these people making millions and millions of dollars, people just running these fracking companies, and buying up vast amounts of land that's extremely cheap. But you have to buy, 10,000 acres. These things don't come in, 5-acre parcels. You're buying 10,000, sometimes as much as 1 million acres at a single shot. So the people making their money off of fracking are buying up this land and having vast land reserves. So now instead of the federal government having vast land reserves, you have individuals, of course, who can't possibly use it all, owning vast tracts of land. But that's another issue. That's another aside issue that probably good for another show. But the point is that once you do fracking, you have destroyed the underground ecosystem to the point where you cannot extract again. So they're extracting all of this natural gas very quickly, but the flip side is that in 3 to 5 years, it's going to become very difficult to get natural gas. So what is the U.S. doing? They're selling tremendous amounts of natural gas and exporting it. Well, exporting energy is not, I repeat, for a country, for the Mideast, where you got, a couple million people living in a little country and they have vast oil reserves, they'll never use it all themselves. But in a country like the United States, we should not be selling our oil. Take a country at the extreme end of this, like in, say, South America, Latin America, where they have a very limited some of the countries. Venezuela has the biggest oil reserves in the world, but some of its neighboring countries have very little. In fact, there are countries that are using their petroleum in South America that plan on running out or expected to run out of petroleum in the next 5 years. Yet they're selling petroleum on the international market. Well, how stupid is that? Absolutely insane. Because then they're going to have to buy 100% of it on the world market. But they're doing it because the politicians are greedy. So once again, the real question is, how should we be using our energy? And the other thing is that coal, if you look at the issues that I talked about fracking, coal is our best long-term energy source. If we're going to be dependent on something, the nuclear power plants are all short-lived. They're short-lived for this world. The power companies, I said before, and this is just watch it, it's going to happen. All of the power companies in the United States in the next 2 years will be in bankruptcy court. And that's because look at PG&E with the San Onofre facility down there north of San Diego. $5 billion just to decommission a plant that they had a problem there. They won't say what it is publicly, but they had to shut that brand new nuclear plant down. $5 billion. How's an electric company going to absorb a $5 billion bill after paying all that money to install the plant and they can't use it? Well, there's no way they can do that. So what they're doing is fudging the number. They're blaming it on the fires in California. Well, that's ridiculous. That's no man's land. There's very little business out in the area where the fires were. So obviously, they're fudging the numbers to hide what's really going on. They're going under because they can't manage their nuclear power plants. And this is going to go on all over the United States. And then we're going to be dependent on coal and natural gas as our primary sources of energy. As I said, because of fracking, we're overproducing natural gas. We're selling it on the international market. And in within 5 years, we're going to start to see the economic pinch of low production of natural gas. So that gets us back to coal, but they're shutting down all the coal plants today because natural gas is cheap. So it's a runaway train with nobody at the helm. And, Trump is a good president, but he doesn't have the information to make better decisions. He's trying to make decisions, but I can see You know, but he rightfully is saying that three-blade wind turbines and solar are a disaster, which they are. Walmart found that out the hard way. And there's going to be a lawsuit where the Walmart is going to demand its money back. And Tesla is going to have to cough up. Tesla is going to be found to be negligent, and they're going to have to replace all that money that Walmart invested, not only remove them, but give us our money back. So that's going to be happening. So Trump is right about three-blade wind turbines and solar, and the New Green Deal people are nutso because they don't understand that that stuff doesn't work. So our energy policy is really in a big mess. The solution is the Mikani wind generator, which takes energy from the wind, and then we overbuild so that we literally can run on 100% of energy from the wind. So that's an amazing necessity that has to come about. It will, because it's a financial necessity. Back to the original question, are we heading into an ice age? Actually, I don't think so. But there is no indication. Remember that the warming period we're going through today is because we are coming out of an ice age. Earth is getting back to, remember, the dinosaurs lived for millions and millions, hundreds of millions of years on an Earth that had a very stable, warm climate, north to south pole. And so anyway, and we have had tremendous influx of water since that time. That's why the ocean levels are higher. But in that environment, the dinosaurs also had a very high carbon dioxide atmosphere that promoted tremendous growth that allowed them the foliage where they would eat. The same with the mastodons, which was only a few thousand years ago. The Earth's atmosphere had a much higher carbon dioxide, hundreds if not thousands of times higher than today, making it into a beautiful, lush planet. Okay, so anyway, I just want to remind you that my water filters are on sale for 15% off, the whole house water filters on sale for 10% off, free shipping to the 48 states. Now that summer's over, get back to thinking about your health, about the winter, about the kids going to school, taking a shower every day in that chemical soup. You know, get a whole house water filter, or at least get a filter in the kitchen, and possibly even in the bathroom. And those that are interested in the wing generator, the smaller ones are coming online availability now, which you can install yourself. And that's one of the big cost savings, too, because the bigger ones, we got to send a crew out and install them, etc. And that's, you know, a lot of expense. And most people don't need that much energy. That's what we're finding out. So all of this on my webpage for information, jmccsci.com. This is James Mikani. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.